Welcome to the Small Steps, Big Wins podcast. I'm dedicated to helping you take control of your life. Together, we'll explore practical tips, expert advice, and inspiring stories to help you overcome obstacles and achieve your goals. Making small changes is possible and can lead to big results. Are you ready? Let's go do this. Let's try this interview again, take two, which I'm excited about. And, you know, they say what, it's better second time around. So Brad, welcome.
Dude, thank you. And, you know, I do apologize for all my technical hiccups the other day, but it is an absolute pleasure to, you know, do this again. And I'm glad we're able to do it so quickly.
We're going to have an awesome conversation. So Brad, I let my guests start where they like to start. So talk about your background and, you know, share the story behind the creation of your ISOFIT and what inspired you. So just, you know, pick it up where is natural for you.
Well, that's perfect. Well, let's just first and foremost, just explain what ISOFIT is. So I'm a 24-time patent holder on the world's first full body isometric training apparatus. And we'll get into that a little bit deeper later as to what that is. But just to let you know who some of my clients are that I get to work with basically on a daily basis, if not, you know, that or a weekly. We're currently in 33 countries. We supply over 380 ISOFIT family members of various sizes, from mom and pops all the way through to the U.S. military, the FBI, 20% of the NBA, the British Royal Navy, and it's pretty remarkable the people that we get to work with. So just to sort of explain to everyone what it is that I created, really, at the end of the day, if I simplify it, I created a fancy wall that we're able to bring into the middle of a room to perform isometric exercise. So what is isometric exercise? Well, it's your ability to generate muscle tension into an object where the object doesn't move. So one of the things that we forget about when we lift up a weight, we put a weight in our hand to do exercises to resist motion. So the ISOFIT is just the ultimate motion restraint platform. So you can restrain all human joint motion. So you can target your arms, your legs, your core, all your neck muscles very, very safely, effectively, and efficiently. So we just basically took the guess, hope, and pray out of exercise, really.
Okay, that's cool. There's isometric training, which I know we're going to dive even more into. There's also dynamic exercise. So how would you define dynamic exercise? Because we're going to talk about the difference between the two.
That's true. So dynamic exercise is when you have movement, right? So that's the stuff you traditionally do in a gym where it's you're lifting the weight up or down. So dynamic movement would be defined as basically creating a concentric, like an up phase where the muscle is shortening, and a longer phase where the muscle is like elongating. That would be the eccentric phase, like the down phase, like a bicep curl. So we go up, that's concentric. We go down, that would be the eccentric. The static portion where you're not moving would be defined as the isometric portion. And with the isometrics, so basically when you're looking at creating muscle tension, so the muscle is going to ramp up in tension, right? It's like almost like you're just trying to flex your abs, but without moving. That would be an isometric. So you're going to get a little bit of shortening of the muscle, but the tendon elongates slightly. So there's really no change in joint position. So as long as you're not moving your joints, you would be basically doing isometric training. So a lot of stuff in yoga or martial arts, like if you think karate, where you're holding positions for periods of time, that would be a form of isometrics, which would be defined as a holding isometric muscle action where you're holding still for a period of time. What I usually propose is pulling into an immovable object, which would be called basically a pushing or pulling isometric muscle action. So a Pima versus a Hema. So, and they're neurologically, they're similar, but yet totally different. But yoga would be basically that holding where I'm holding periods of time. Karate or martial arts would be I'm holding that position for a period of time. So things like people would be familiar with would be like a wall squat or a plank, right? Those would be sort of that Hema environment where I'm holding that for a period of time. A Pima would be like I go under a bench press and I sort of put too much weight on and, you know, in a safe environment and I'm trying to lift it, but it doesn't move. So that would be sort of that environment, which I would be more in favor of proposing to the masses. It's just generally safer and way more effective long term.
Okay. I also think of running. Running would be considered dynamic exercise, or I'm thinking like Planet Fitness, where you go in, you've got the stationary bikes that would be considered dynamic, or the elliptical machine. Those would be considered dynamic. And then if somebody, you know, they walk into the gym and they see like the leg press or like a shoulder press. Is that considered dynamic exercise too?
Anytime you're moving. You know, and with that, there's a lot more risk. You know,
right. So, talk about that. So you walk into the gym and what do you see? Rows of treadmills, rows of ellipticals. You see the exercise equipment. So the first thing that your brain goes to is, oh, wait, I'm supposed to use all of this stuff and it's supposed to be safe, effective. And this is what's going to get me the body that I want. So, and then we're going to dive into misconceptions as well and myths.
So you look at it and you go, the general population, we've been told that we need to move in order to be healthy. And that's actually inaccurate, because the majority of people that do move, they actually end up injured. So if you look at most personal trainers over the course of their career, you know, beyond, if they make it beyond that usually 6 month period, like, which is the traditional length of a personal trainer's career is 6 months, which is pretty sad actually. But what happens is most of these people who are the professionals end up injured by exercise. And most of the exercise participants end up at some stage over their exercising career injured by exercise. And if we're looking at sort of saying, well, you need to be healthy, well, then to me, injuring myself is not healthy. That is actually the epitome and the absolute, what's the word I'm looking for? Basically the antithesis of what I do not want to happen. I don't want to exercise to injure myself.
And yet we accept that as normal though.
Correct, right? Like you mentioned that you're an avid runner. And if you look at the statistics on running, and, you know, America's got an unbelievable running community. It's 50 million people plus. It's absolutely extraordinary. Mm-hmm. These people are running for a myriad of reasons, some of which is health. Some of it is basically to avoid, let's call it, family members, to get away. Like, hey, I can find an hour to just be by myself. So there's many different ways we can look at this. But when you look at the science of injuries related to running, it ranges, depending on the study you read, between 30 and 90% of runners. And that is annually, right? So if you're thinking, okay, well, if I go 90% of 50 million people are injured running, that's 45 million people are injured annually by running. Mm-hmm. Statistically speaking, the longer your running career, the more often you're going to be injured and the more severe the injury is going to be. So it doesn't get better with more. So, but we sort of position this as the ultimate health. Now, there's many benefits to running, and I'm not saying that, oh, if you run, you're going to instantly be injured. It's just your odds are really, really, really high if you're looking at the 90%. That means 9 out of every 10 people will be injured by the activities that they're looking to do. That's not health. That's mild. Let's call it addiction. Let's call it obsession. You know, it could be community. I love going running with my peer, and it's where I actually get my social engagement. So there's many different things you look at and you go, okay, well, that's a positive. But at what point in time do we have to sort of say enough is enough? And we have to sort of either A, put a warning label on running, or how do we better prepare for running? And basically, if you look at the science behind that, there's very few things, be it interventions, that actually reduce running risk or injury, running-related injury risk.
Yeah, because when you think of running, you think of stretching. You know, they say you stretch before you run. Now, me personally, I've been a runner for 20 years. I never stretch. I hit the pavement cold in the morning. That's just what I've done for 20 years. I started late. I started when I was 30. I'm 51 now, and what you're talking about with the injuries and the aches and the pains, when you're 30 or even younger, all that stuff, it's like, oh, you get injured, your body heals itself, and you really don't think much of it, but nobody talks about the long-term ramifications. Is there a balance that you can think of? I run 6 days a week, and I'm even starting to question whether or not that's a good idea. So, you know, what would your suggestion be?
Well, first you'd have to define what your goal is, right? Mm. Like why are you running? Let's start with the obvious. If your goal is health, well, then we have one sort of stream to a conversation. If your goal is performance training because you want to be good at marathon running, well, that's a different conversation. You may have to recognize you are going to have to sacrifice a portion of health for performance, right? So, I mean, it's not just, oh, do A or B. It could be do A, B, C, D, E, F, and G in order to best prepare for that. But when you're looking at running specifically, most people like yourself, who are actually the majority of people, should actually just run cold, right? What they do by stretching prior to running is they actually destabilize their joint structure. They inhibit their muscles so the muscles don't absorb force and don't create force effectively. So if all of a sudden, let's say you're like, you know, you have your pre-stretch before you go for a run, and it's like, okay, well, maybe that would be the equivalent of undoing my shoelace before I go for a run, right? We all know how kind of like, well, that might not be the best option, right? We want our shoelace relatively tight so our footwear actually stays on our foot. So if you are sort of destabilizing your structure by stretching, well, maybe you're putting yourself at greater risk. So yourself, you know, we talked the other day, so it's like, you know, you've had basically 17 years of injury-free running. Mm-hmm. And there's a high probability based off the odds. Well, if 30 to 90% of the people are being injured every year, you crushed those odds. And high probability that was because you didn't stretch. Right? Okay. So your muscles, when running, naturally warmed up. They naturally got basically the blood flow into the area, but you didn't destabilize them before you ran. You allowed them to be taut, right? To have that tension. So you could experience and absorb that force, right? And also, usually, I'm willing to bet, and I don't know this answer, you didn't start out at 100% effort from the moment you sort of said go. You probably slowly, gradually ran into that pace, what I would assume, you know, because that would be...
I get used to it. I mean, like I'll hit maybe, I actually try and stay as consistent as possible. So it's like, I just hit the ground running and then I keep doing it, but my body's so used to it, it already automatically knows what to do. But an interesting point though, on the injury side, I actually did get injured about, I want to say 6 years ago, I had a groin pull injury and I basically annihilated any running I could do. That was it. I couldn't even really walk on the treadmill for years. It took years for that to heal. Now, granted, I didn't do physical therapy. I didn't go to the doctor. I didn't do any of that stuff. But it took a long time. I didn't really start running again until last year.
Oh, okay.
And then I just, and it took me a while. I would say it took a good month before I could get back up again. But I'm now at the pace where I was before, but I don't run anywhere as near as I used to like a decade ago, where I'd run 3 miles, then 4 miles, then 5 miles, and then, you know, cycle through anywhere between 3 to 6 miles a day. I just don't do it anymore. The one thing I did want to ask you about, and runners talk about this, the running high. Where you're running, and you've got that high. How can I address that runner's high? And does isometric training, can that fit into what runners might be looking for?
Well, first, let's sort of address the elephant in the room. That runner's high is basically a natural pain suppressor to allow you to traumatize your body. So that's why it doesn't start immediately. You have to basically run for a period of or a window of time, and then your body says, oh, we're actually doing this. Well, let's just dump this beautiful sensation into our body, these endorphins that say, oh, I'm going to mask this trauma, right? Because if you think about just the ground impact forces associated with running, they're huge. You know, you might be sort of 5 times your body weight every stride. Right. So if you're a 200-pound individual, that's not you, but let's say it's a 200-pound individual. So, well, 5 times body weight, that's 1,000 pounds on your back. The answer is nobody or very few humans can do that. So we're impacting our joint structures with this ground reaction force that is traumatic to our structure. Right. So you have to look at that and you've got to be open to the possibility that, A, that's a thing. But how do you sort of better prepare your body to tolerate these forces associated with running? Well, then that's where isometrics can come in, right? If you think about isometrics, so learning how to generate force into an immovable object will better prepare your body to maximize its strength and stability, right? Which is imperative to running quality and the longevity of running. Now, I'm not going to be the one who comes out here and professes that if you do isometrics, you're going to run pain-free, because running is that traumatic that might not even be possible. Isometrics is the best way that you can prepare for running, though, because as soon as you start moving, you're no longer preparing for movement. You're actually participating or practicing movement. So if you have a corrupt neural pathway, meaning that a signal going to an area isn't optimal, isometrics can help fix that rapidly. So we can better prepare your body within basically days, not weeks, not months, not years, within days, to basically be able to run better and more efficiently. So that theoretically will reduce your risk. It won't eliminate your risk, because if you think about, you know, let's say you run a 5 kilometer, so I'm in Canada, so we're kilometers, not miles. So if you run 5 kilometers, you guys have 5K races down there, I know.
Yeah, 5Ks, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, if you run...
They're like a little over 2.5 miles, I think.
Exactly. So if you're running a 5K, and just for simple math, let's say you have a 1 meter stride length, which, I mean, that's pretty short for a runner, but if you're not a good runner, it's probably your stride length. So let's say, well, that would be 2,500 impacts on your left side, 2,500 impacts on your right side. So, and if I'm talking about a newbie runner who wants to just basically get out there and say, hey, I might be a little bit obese, I want to participate, I want to start losing some weight, and I'm going to use a 5K as a goal, right? But that's like, hey, new jogger person, well, you got a little bit of mass to lose, and you're doing 2,500 impacts on left side and right side. Mm-hmm. Now, if I equate that to an upper body exercise and say, hey, Sue, today what we're going to do is we're going to do 2,500 push-ups, right? And I know
that's
you're
not happening.
Yeah, you're smirking, you're laughing, and you're thinking in your head, well, damn, that means I'm probably going to A, fail, B, I'm probably going to injure myself if I actually achieve it, right? And you look at that and you go, okay, well, why is a 5K the start of most race series? Why don't we start with 1,000 kilometers or 1,000 meters, right? So 1 kilometer. A 1K race, you're a newbie, and learn how to progress and go from 1K, oh, now we have the 2K race. We actually have the 3K race, 4K race.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just looked it up. It's 3.1 miles, just to set the record straight for those who are listening. And I don't want to get that mail that says, hey, 5K race is not 2.1, it's 3.1.
Yeah,
the point is, it puts, for those who are starting out, it puts a lot of stress on the body. And as you said, and, you know, reiterated over and over again, the possibility for injury is so much greater. How it would work with your machine for somebody who's a runner, so that we can at least get an idea of, like, just one type of isometric exercise. I mean, I know that there's people out there probably have a picture of a plank in their mind, but I've seen the equipment. I know what it looks like. So you're not really planking. You're doing something else.
We're doing everything else.
Right.
Plank, you know, and we can circle back, but I wouldn't recommend the plank for most people. But anyway, what I'll do is, so you've heard of those people that when you run, you can hear them coming because their foot is slapping.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's usually a result that they don't have good hip stability. So what happens is they don't have good glute medius stability. So their pelvis doesn't sit level. Their leg doesn't have clearance to swing straight underneath. So it actually goes out and around, and they'll hit the ground and you'll hear that slap. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's usually only on one side. It's not both sides. Most people don't have, you know, dysfunction on both sides, because that would actually equalize. So you'd have two crappy hips instead of one, so you wouldn't get that slapping. But what the glute medius is, it's the muscle on the outside of your pelvis, right? That basically connects your pelvis to your femur, and it basically goes from the outside. And for those that are watching, you know, it would be like right across here down to your hip bone, basically that greater trochanter, which is that hip. And what that's responsible for is stabilizing your pelvis. So when you have a swing phase, it contracts isometrically as you're running in order to go through that phase, right? So an easy way to train that, and for the people that are watching, know, it'd be me like jumping up on here, and it'd be like me pulling my foot into a wall. And so I'm kind of stabilizing. So what it kind of looks like, it would be like that pulling into a wall. So here and pulling in. So what that's going to do, that's going to strengthen all through here. Now, if I wanted to work my bum, well, I would just have to go straight back, contact the wall, and turn it out. And that's the most effective way to train your glutes. Now, because you had a groin injury, if you turned your foot in and pulled straight back, that would actually help sort of target that inner thigh tissue. As well, you could also sit and pull across into something that doesn't move, right? Turning your foot out is one way, turning your foot in is a different way. So you have all of these different options that you can use a wall, you can use a door frame. If you're out for a run and you sort of drove to the area you're running, you could use the, you know, the tire of your car. So all you, once you have the concept of to learn how to restrain movements, well, then I can basically restrain all human movement, right? So if you're sort of the office worker who's got low back pain, well, maybe sitting up in your chair and using the chair as a restraint and learning how to pull back into that chair. So that would actually help increase the strength endurance of those muscles that otherwise, you know, get fatigued and they go, I've been sitting at my desk for hours, you know, which is an isometric action because you're not moving, but you still need that tension in the muscle structure, you know?
Yeah.
So there's
a
lot of things that we just have to look at and go, oh yeah, that's where isometrics fits in. Oh, standing, sleeping, sitting in a chair, driving a car, lifting a dumbbell, lifting my grandchildren. Like isometrics is there in everything we do, like an isometric muscle contraction. So much so they traditionally call it posture, right? You know, it's like one of those things like, oh, okay, posture, I need good posture. That means you need good isometric endurance strength to hold your body in space.
Okay. You have such a vast array of knowledge. I just love talking to you. Brad, what education have you put out there? Is there stuff people can go to on your website and YouTube? And I'll put links and things in the notes, but I just want you to address that for those who couldn't watch or wanted to go see more. What do you have out there?
We have, so on our YouTube channel, so we have an ISOFIT YouTube channel, so ISOPHIT. And we have about 15 hours of me just sort of looking at different subject areas. Like during COVID, we put out basically a blog called Zero Velocity, which was basically isometrics for, you name a subject, whether it's postpartum, you know, abdominal sort of issues when you're looking at diastasis recti. So women who have had separation with the linea alba, that thing down the center there. So we talked about that in one episode. We talked about neck pain, back pain, golf performance, running performance. Like, you name it, we basically touched on it. So it was about 15
awesome.
Hours of that. So we have about 200 isometric exercise videos or tutorials that you can sort of watch. So that way, you know, whether you have the ISOFIT or, you know, you just want to sort of say, hey, I'm not prepared to purchase this product yet, but I can use a wall and try to mimic what he said in the video. You know, using a towel, using a door frame, using the tire of your wall, you know, so for me, it's about getting people doing isometrics. It's not so much, yes, please buy my product, but it's about actually creating a healthier society, because what we've promoted for the last 50 years of in the exercise industry has led to where we currently are, which is, you know, which is brutal. It's 80% of the American public does not exercise regularly, i.e. belong to a gym. And of the 20% that do, they go to the gym less than twice a week. You know, so it's absolutely appalling. The rate of injury and obesity or hypertension or heart disease is all at epidemic levels. And we just instantly blame everything. We go, well, it's the food we eat. It's the pharmaceuticals we take. It's like, well, no, it's actually the fact that maybe you're just not doing the right thing at the gym, and you go to the gym and you get hurt. And now you have a negative feeling associated with fitness.
Now, you mentioned about pharmaceuticals. And when we had our conversation before the podcast, you talked about how you spent a number of years not doing isometric exercise because of your high blood pressure. Could you share that story and you know, what's around that and what you found out.
Yeah. So one of the things, so with my designations, I was the 21st person in the world with my dual designations. I went to school for exercise science, or a version of, which looked at cardiovascular rehabilitation. So all your different exercise testing, where, you know, you'd go in to the hospital and get a stress test. So that's what I went to school for. And throughout the whole process, they used to always tell me that, you know, if you had high blood pressure or hypertension, you should not do isometric exercise. And the reason I got into the exercise industry in the first place is because my mom's dad died of a massive heart attack when she was 15 years of age, right? So I never met my grandfather. Then subsequently, jump forward a couple of years, I'm now born, I'm 7 years old, I lose my grandmother, and my mom's like 33, like that window, to a massive heart attack. So my grandmother was 68. So I grew up in a house of heart health, right? Like the fear of, oh, you can't really do much or anything like that. And, you know, as a high level athlete, and went to school on a volleyball scholarship. And while I'm in my program, we discover that my resting blood pressure is 150 over 100. And I exercise six times per week, if not more, multi times per day as an athlete. You know, so sometimes I'd be exercising 12 times a week, and, you know, with competitions and everything like that. But my blood pressure was 150 over 100. And they were adamant that I could not do isometric exercise because it was considered contraindicated for individuals with hypertension. So they were worried about me increasing my likelihood of a stroke or a heart attack, you know, if I'm exerting force without moving. And so jump forward. So that was when I was 19 years old. So for the next 14 years, I struggled with hypertension. I changed my diet. I exercised more. I exercised less. I changed the frequency, the intensity, the type, and nothing changed. Now, I was not going to go on a pharmaceutical agent at the age of 19. I'm not a massive fan of the pharmaceutical industry. They do great work. They help a lot of people, but they exploit a lot of people as well. But that's a different subject area altogether. You know, so you look at stuff like that, and it's like, okay, so jump forward. I'm now 34 years of age. I got all my designations. I'm really smart in the subject area. Still not doing isometrics for myself because, I know, I bought into the messaging before. This is bad for individuals with hypertension. Even though I'm doing it for individuals who are suffering pain, so I'm doing a type of therapy that looked at basically restoring the communication to muscle structure, and we did a lot of isometrics there. So we dubbed it neuromuscular reeducation. And so doing this neuromuscular reeducation, so we're helping people with pain, we're helping people with performance. And then subsequently, I hear about a study come over the radio, and this is about 2008, sort of the end of 2007, and it was from McMaster University, which is a local sort of university in the Toronto region, that stated that a single or isometric exercise was great for lowering blood pressure. It was basically produced the result of a single pharmaceutical agent. And I was like, excuse me? Hold on. I've been avoiding this. Okay, let me use myself as a guinea pig. So I created my own little 20-minute isometric routine, which was just using a wall. And within 2 weeks, after a 14-year struggle with hypertension, my blood pressure was normalized.
Wow. Didn't do medication, right? So you went all those years and you just said, I'm just going to live with the high blood pressure and take my risks. Okay.
Exactly. Which, I mean, at the end of the day, may or may not have been the better option. I'm not sure. You know, time will tell. However, if I can normalize my blood pressure within two weeks.
2 weeks, that's amazing. Yeah.
And we've had several ISOFIT owners get off blood pressure medication, you know, and it does come with a significant warning. Let me warn you, isometrics is very efficient. So if you are taking blood pressure medication, tell your doctor you are going to start an isometric protocol. You're going to look to lower your blood pressure naturally. Because one of our clients who did this, he's out of Oklahoma City, which happens to be the number one leader in the United States of America for hypertension. If it's not number one, it's number two. So it took him a little bit of time because he was like haphazard with his isometrics. Like did it. But, you know, eventually he got to the point where he was not requiring his medication. He was actually hospitalized because he was taking medication he was no longer supposed to.
Oh, wow.
So he almost, I won't say he almost died, but he had significant health issues because he was still taking medication when he didn't need it.
Do you find a lot of resistance from the medical community when, because it's kind of counterintuitive, right? You know, it's like, you wouldn't think something as simple as isometric exercise could lower the blood pressure like that. But yet there's still evidence out there that says it can be done.
The answer is, when I started, I had an ungodly amount of resistance. However, science has caught up. So now, like the British Journal of Sports Medicine just 2 months ago, and this was pushed out through all the global media outlets, which is absolutely fantastic, was that isometric exercise has now been deemed better than cardiovascular training, resistance training, the combination of both cardio and resistance training, and high-intensity interval training for lowering blood pressure in a hypertensive population. So I get far less resistance now, and I get a lot of phone calls now because, and this is something I've been touting, since 2008. Now, it's not my research. It was my personal sort of anecdotal story where it's like, hey, I changed my blood pressure in 2 weeks. You know, this is how I did it. Here's the research. Now, when you explore the research, and this is where I just get frustrated, it goes back to 1969, where they dubbed it the isometric phenomenon. So there was a gentleman, he was a U.S. Air Force research scientist by the name of Dr. Ronald Wiley. So he was commissioned to figure out how to increase blood pressure in fighter pilots so they could withstand more G-force so they wouldn't black out. So what they found within the first couple of days of their study was, so the goal of the study was to raise blood pressure. As a fighter pilot, you actually need to be pre-hypertensive to qualify, because if you're lower blood pressure, you're more likely to crash the plane, you'll black out, and all these. So they're in order to qualify, you have to be pre-hypertensive. So what they found within days starting their trials was that when you're squeezing the joystick or the control stick with your hand and you're sustaining that, what they started to see was a lot of the pilots, their blood pressure started to drop. This doesn't work for fighter pilots. This sucks. Well, let's scrap it. So Dr. Ronald Wiley went out on this sort of tangent and sort of said, well, look at how many people in society actually have blood pressure issues. So he studied this for, I think basically to the day he died, which was, probably about a decade ago. It wasn't too far ago or long ago. But what he discovered was basically the foundation of all this research that has stemmed from 1969 to the stuff that just came out a couple months ago, where you're looking at isometrics as a mode of exercise to lower blood pressure. Now, the key is make sure you're breathing when you're exerting force, right? Don't hold your breath and exert force. And a lot of the initial studies was, the purists, well, you can't move at all. So you have to exert force and don't move.
Hold your breath. No, because I think, isn't it when you hold your breath, you can get those headaches too. There's a medical term for it that eludes me that I'm sure you know, but it's...
the Valsalva maneuver.
That's right? It. Yeah. And so you have to remember to breathe, and it's an art. It's definitely an art. I imagine that the information that you have available out there addresses a lot of what we're talking about.
With the blood pressure stuff, we have a 45-minute talk on how to explain it. And quickly, just to give you sort of the overview, we talk about the cardiovascular system like there's only one component. We talk about the heart. We talk about the arteries. We very seldom ever include the veins in this conversation, right? So there's two sides to your atrial system. So you have your cardiovascular system. Sorry, you have your atrial side and you have your venous side. The atrial side houses 35% of your blood volume, right? So that's your heart, your arteries, capillaries, and stuff like that. They hold 35% of your blood volume. Your venous side, which is your veins, holds 65% of your blood volume. So if I actually want to improve the efficiency of my circulatory system as a whole, yes, your heart is important. However, that represents 35% of the equation. If I want to fix it, I need to fix the 65%. And when you're looking at how the blood gets circulated back to the heart, that's basically a muscle pump, right? So the muscles have to contract and relax. So if you have an inefficient muscular system because you focus on dynamic exercise, right? And I'll say that mm-hmm. that way. Because during mm-hmm. a dynamic muscle contraction, the tissue of the muscle has an activation rate of about 88 or 89%. During an isometric muscle contraction, you have the ability to approach 100%. So I can get anywhere between, let's call it 7 and 12% greater activation of a muscle. So meaning it's going to participate more frequently at a higher rate of participation during an isometric contraction than it is a dynamic contraction. So in essence, if I focus on isometrics, I improve the 65% of the equation quicker, faster, stronger, like way quicker than you could ever do it dynamically. And the studies show that when you look at the sort of the success rate of isometrics, or basically they have a success index. So cardiovascular training was a success index of something like 49%. Mm-hmm. Isometrics is 98.
Wow. So to talk about the story of the lady in Mexico, you told me that before, and I really found this story fascinating. And then when you're done telling the story, tie it into, and I also want to talk about diet, where diet fits into all of this as well in her story too.
The lady in Mexico. So we have a program called 30 and 30. So it's 30 isometrics in 30 minutes, right? It's not easy. It's challenging. It's safe. It's effective and it's highly efficient, but it's not easy. So we have this thing called the 30-day challenge. So our partners down in Mexico, one of their clients was Maria. And Maria, she was a larger woman, so let's put her on the obese side of the spectrum. And so she was, you know, hesitant, but she was game. So she's like, okay, well, I've tried everything else. Nothing seems to work. Let's try this whole 30 and 30 isometric, you know, ISOFIT challenge type thing. And so this is the cool thing about what we do. So because it's static exercise, there's not much risk, right? So you're just basically contracting muscles into an immovable object. So Maria jumps into this, you know, and she's game. So our only stipulation is there's no dietary change. You don't get to do cardiovascular exercise during this time, and you don't get to lift weights. What we want you to do is actually commit to solely doing ISOFIT, right? This 30 and 30 protocol. There's 10 exercises for your lower body, 10 for your core, 10 for your upper body, right? So it's a complete whole body workout in 30 minutes. Each muscle contraction lasts for a length of 45 seconds, and there's a 15 second transition time between exercise one and exercise two, all the way up to exercise 30, right? So the total time of exercise is 22 and a half minutes, and you have 7.5 minutes of rest built in. Right. But normally when you go to the gym, you just futz around. You have no structure. Right. So, oh, I'm on three sets of 10 and this, that, and the other. But rarely do people actually time their rest intervals. So jump us forward. So Marie, so 22 days into the program, right? So she's exercised a total of 11 hours, including the rest period. Right. So 25% of that 11 hours is actually rest. Right. So, you know, she's not even exercised 11 total hours yet. She's down 3 dress sizes.
Wow. And she's exercising every day then, right? Because right. usually you hear that, oh, you're supposed to have a rest day. You know, you hit the gym hard and then you rest. So ISOFIT, you don't need that rest, but you can. Oh, my gosh, that's amazing.
So the key is consistency. The key is not effort, right? Like most people, they exercise to the point of injury that requires rest because they actually have to rehab. Well, that's just, you know, pardon my language, that's just sheer stupidity. Why would you injure yourself exercising for the goal of getting healthier? It makes no logical sense. Versus, you know, if you, let's say, you know, the wall behind me, let's say my goal is to touch that wall. I do not have to tie my hands behind my back and run head first. You know, that's how we approach exercise. You know, let's do more. Let's push it harder. Let's do this. It's like, no, I want to show up tomorrow, the next day, and the next day. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm going to tell you to exercise 3 hours a week, right? Which is what normally would say, oh, you need to exercise 3 hours a week. Well, mm-hmm. I'm going to chop my exercise up into 6 days, not 3 1-hour days. Because when you exercise 3 1-hour days, well, you still have 4 days you didn't exercise. You're not exercising 50% of the week. So what goal do you ever expect to achieve when you're only putting in 48%. Versus my goal, it's like, okay, whatever the math of 6 out of 7 is, you know, 88% of the week I'm exercising. You know, so I'm more likely to achieve that goal if I'm exercising 88% of the time. Now, I'm also not, you know, I'll tell you to try at 100% effort. But when you're pushing into an immovable object, that effort will drop. So let's say I'm pushing my arm in to a wall and I'm pushing with 100 pounds. Well, over the course of that 45 seconds, that effort is going to drop due to fatigue. So I might finish with 30 pounds of effort, right? So when you average that, you go, okay, I was at 100, I'm down to 30. Well, I might be sort of, you know, 35 off. So I might be pushing with a total of 65 pounds is my average, you know, but that end, it feels harder than the high. So we have a built-in safety mechanism that says you're going to fatigue. It's going to be uncomfortable, but it's going to be safer, already built into the program. So for people like Maria who need to lose some weight, for people that are just starting out on their exercise experience, this is a safer way to approach exercise. You know, and guess what? If you're new to exercise, don't try at 100%, even if it's going to drop off. Mm-hmm. Start at 50%, you know, because the goal has to be future participation. The goal can't just be, I got to kill it today, and end up having a negative mental experience such that it actually harmed me. And here's a thing, if you think about most people and why they don't exercise, it's because they got hurt. They have a negative experience with exercise that often started in gym class when they were kids. You know, they were a little bit obese and they told them, go run around. Oh, they get laughed at. They're not coordinated because they might have a giraffe structure where they're tall and gangly and they get hurt because the coach, be it the physical fitness teacher, didn't have a clue about physical fitness because they happened to be the librarian trying to fill in and do something good for people. Yeah. You know, but we have to approach this like we're medical doctors with that sort of, hey, we're creating internal change. So we really should go and understand what's going on internally.
So what's your thoughts on diet then? So obviously you told Maria she didn't change her diet. What are your thoughts?
Diet can enhance or harm. I'm not a dietitian, so I tend to stay away from that subject area. I like to stay on my own lane. You know, eat a sensible diet, and what that means to the individual is, you know, to each their own, because right. It really is goal dependent. I'm of the belief that if you do wish to lose weight, maybe you have to look at your energy expenditures. Right? Like if you're matching your energy expenditure, well, you're not going to lose weight. If you're exceeding your energy, or if you're consuming more than you're burning, well, you're most likely going to put on weight. Now, the interesting thing is when you explore isometrics, I mean, we have an unbelievable cheat code relative to fat loss. Now, here's where it gets
What does
really-
that mean? What does that mean? A cheat code in relation to fat loss. What does that mean?
Well, basically with isometrics, so 30 seconds of isometric muscle contractions at a maximal level, like you're trying to squeeze really, really, really hard, burns the similar amount of calories on a per muscle basis as maximum sprinting. So isometrics has the ability to burn fat at the rate of maximum sprinting on a per muscle basis for a specific period of time. So the study is sort of looked at 30 seconds, right? So if I'm sprinting as hard as I can, and the study or the comments were basically to the vastus lateralis, which is the outside thigh muscle, otherwise it's part of your quadricep group, right? Your quads, that upper thigh muscle. So what they looked at was 30 seconds of maximum isometrics versus 30 seconds of maximum sprinting. So sprinting burns more calories. It just doesn't work the whole time. So what happens in that 30-second window, because you're squeezing the muscle the whole time, the muscle is burning calories the whole time. With sprinting, because it only works a proportionate period of that 30 seconds, it's only working a period of time within that. So let's say it's half, right? So they burn similar calories. So if you're looking to burn fat, well, isometrics, well, it's actually as efficient, or it's actually more efficient because it's actually doubled the caloric expenditure for this time period.
Right. But if you're sprinting, you're also putting all that trauma on your body as well, which is just, you know, we talked about running and when, you know, what was happening when you run. So I guess, you know, equal for all said, isometrics is way better for the body because less likely an injury and you're not doing the pounding that has to happen. Because I've sprinted on a treadmill at 30 seconds. And if you're not a runner, that's not easy to maintain something for that long.
And imagine being out of shape or obese. You know, it's probably not the recommended place to start. You know, and I'm not saying if you're in shape, you know, if you're in shape and you have the strength and everything like that. But, you know, sprinters are highly trained physical specimens with years of training behind them. Just because you're an average Joe going, hey, I read it in, you know, this magazine or I saw this YouTuber or Instagram celeb going, hey, you need to throw in sprinting. Well, that might be the most moronic thing you could do as a new exerciser or even a slightly seasoned or aged exerciser.
I'm guilty.
Yeah, totally. And the risk just outweighs the benefits. Now, here's where it gets really interesting with isometrics and fat loss. So one thing that individuals with metabolic conditions, let's call it obesity, so they have a reduction of blood flow into adipose tissue. So it's a defensive strategy the body has in order to not basically keep filling these basically fat cells with fat. So it basically just sort of down-regulates the ability to actually access these stored areas. So with a dynamic exercise protocol, right? So when you do movement exercise, you're going to run out of oxygen if you're doing cardiovascular training. The brain says we need oxygen into that muscle. Send blood flow to that working muscle. So that happens. It's called perfusion. So the blood goes into the muscle, the blood goes out of the muscle. Everything's fine and dandy. During an isometric contraction that is of a longer hold or a longer period, 45 seconds, 90 seconds, like that window, well, you're still going to run out of oxygen within that muscle. Your brain is going to send that oxygen to that working muscle, but because it's still squeezing, so we will call that occlusion, right? So it's still occluding that tissue or that blood flow into the area. So what they've seen in the research, and this is on a localized area, right? So not broad spectrum, not whole body. So if I'm contracting my quadricep and it's for a longer period of time, the brain will send oxygen to that muscle. And obviously you need blood flow to transport that oxygen. But because the muscle is still tight and it's still squeezing, that blood flow gets actually diverted into the local adipose tissue, right? So, and what they've seen is there's an increase in blood flow to adipose tissue at a rate approaching 700% greater. So if I can increase blood flow to local adipose tissue, I now access this stored, you know, fat cells in that tissue. So I can actually start to utilize it for energy at a greater rate. So in essence, what I'm getting at, you can actually spot reduce fat with isometrics, which is kind of cool because that sort of conflicts with everything everyone tells you, but it's clear as day in the literature. And it's like, okay, well, if you're able to spot reduce fat, now the beautiful part about isometrics, you're squeezing a whole bunch of muscles.
Right. So you're going to hit all over the body.
You got it. So what we see is rapid weight loss. And you look back to stories like Maria, who lost 3 dress sizes in 3 weeks. And you go, why is that possible? Now, here's where it also will throw another layer on top of this. There's some research that compares isometrics to selectorized weight training equipment from an energy requirement perspective. What they found was basically 1 minute of sustained isometrics was the equivalent of 6 minutes of resistance training on selectorized equipment.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right? So that just, if I'm understanding you correctly, so if I go 6 minutes into the gym and I'm going to do bicep curls or tricep pushdowns for 6 minutes, that is, I can translate that into 1 minute of work on isometrics.
And you look at our programming, right? So if we extrapolate a 30-minute program, right? So 30 times 6 is 180, right? Which is 3 hours, right? So if I can sort of all of a sudden say, hey, Sue, what I want you to do is I want you to exercise 18 hours this week. And you go, well, I don't have 18 hours.
Right.
But all of a sudden, I can compress it into 3 hours. Right. And you start to explore the results that we typically see with 30 and 30 participants. If I just blew that out over 6 weeks and I said, okay, well, what I'm going to see is I want you to sort of compress 6 weeks worth of training into 1 week. That's kind of what we see.
Wow. That's incredible. I'm excited. You know, the more I talk to you, the more I'm like, I'm not sure I really want to go do the running anymore, because as I mentioned before, I'm starting to feel effects like joint pain in my hips. And that's not very appealing to me right now, even though I like running. I want to take care of myself for the long haul so that when I'm 20 years out from today, you know, I'm not having even more issues as well. So I'm excited about that. So yeah. I'm so glad that you brought that up.
You know, now it, and this basically is a story of it sounds too good to be true.
Yeah.
Right. It's really what it is. So you think about women as they age in osteoporosis, right? So you're over 50 now. So you're basically, the rate of hip fractures is 50% of women.
Ouch.
Right. So that's 1 in 2 women over the age of 50 will fracture their hip before they die. Right. So it's
wow, that's a staggering statistic. Because like, if I think of my mom and myself and my sister sitting in the room and we put one other person in there, two of us will have a hip fracture at some point.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Which is kind of crazy.
That's scary.
Yeah. So now here's where isometrics gets really cool. Right. So when you have sustained contractions, right? So the muscle pulls on what's called a tendon. And that tendon basically forms the outer surface of the bone, right? Which is basically what's called your periosteum. So there's an amalgamation of the tendon structure into the periosteum. And it's, what's it called? The ethus, I believe is what they call it, the actual junction. But so this periosteum and that amalgamation of tendon to tissue or tendon to bone structure. So if you have tighter muscles, right? Tighter muscles, not looser muscles. Looser muscles are really bad at generating force, right? Loose means weak. Tight means tension. If you generate more tension into the bone structure, you're going to have more stress into that bone. That bone naturally responds by getting stronger. Right. So as we age, one of the things that we have to account for is height loss. We get shorter with age if we do not maintain our muscular system, the tension generation of our muscular system. So those
I thought that was just a given. We all get short. So you're saying is you don't have to if you take care of yourself.
We can slow the process down.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So if you maintain the strength and stability of your muscle structure, if you maintain the integrity of the bone structure, i.e. you keep it tension within it, right? If you keep it stronger, it's less likely to reduce in structural size, right? Because if you're not using it, your body is just going to reabsorb it and get rid of it. So you're going to basically get weaker bone structure over time. So one of the things that isometrics can do, so there's two things. Not only when you contract a muscle, it compresses, right? It gets shorter, but it also gets wider. So you have a radial expanse. So it's going to get wider. And that, when you're looking at how muscles lay on bone stuff, like on the actual bone, right? If I flex my bicep, it gets shorter one way, but it pushes into the shaft structure of the bone. So I can now start applying force, like basically shear force going into the bone structure. So that's one of the benefits of isometrics or exercise as a whole, but more so isometrics, because you activate that muscle stronger. And because it's a sustained contraction, it's less frictiony and it's more compressive or pushing into. So when you're looking at sort of the osteoblast development of bone, here's a way that we can actually sort of strategically start growing bone. And we can strategically grow bone at specific angles and everything like that through isometrics. I was going to say the rabbit hole is deep.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, isometric training is very beneficial for those who have had injuries. Would you say like fractures, broken bones, things like that, where you can actually make the body stronger around those areas? And I'm thinking we can use isometrics to basically strengthen the body to kind of lessen what the aging process is going to do to us on the back end. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. I mean, you could look at the aging process as the generation of less tension, right? So one, when you're looking at aging, if you look at a six-year-old versus an 18-year-old, right, the attachment sites of their muscles haven't changed. The muscle length has changed. The compression of the muscle has changed. So it's like basically you're born with a rubber band and then you grow. As you're growing, you're getting more tension. Then you hit your peak height at around 28 years old, and then you start to shrink a little bit. And then all of a sudden, you're taking that tension off that band. You know, and then all of a sudden, life stress trauma comes along and starts like playing, like wreaking these havocs. And it's like, okay, well, you know, I don't have the time to exercise. I might be a new mom. I got a new job. You know, like all of these factors play into the I'm just putting myself on the back burner. I'm not putting myself as a priority, as opposed to, you know, what we've been able to do with, like, you know, our 30 and 30 protocol. We found you time. You don't have to go to the gym for half or an hour, you know, and cut it down. You can do less of it.
That's amazing. First of all, the 30 minutes, I think anybody can kind of find 30 minutes in your day. One thing we didn't touch on or talk about is stress reduction. How does isometrics play into like the mental stress reduction and anxiety? Because you just mentioned, I think people would say, oh, I'm too busy to exercise. I'm all stressed out. What have you seen in your experience around stress reduction and isometrics?
Oh, we can look at it two ways. We can look at it with, so British Medical Journal just came out with a research report that looked at individuals with poor isometric strength had higher levels of suicide risk, depression and anxiety, right? So if you're not being held together properly, why should things work properly, right? Like if you have general aches and pains or you don't have that physical confidence, that's going to start to relate to potentially self-image issues, right? Like, oh, I don't look at myself in the mirror. I don't have the confidence. You know, you see those people when they walk in the room with, you know, you see a confident person, they look confident. You see a non-confident person and, well, you know, they're usually in that slouch forward posture. They're not engaging their structure, right? So you can look at it from that perspective. But one of the things that we also have to approach, and if muscles aren't doing their job, blood flow to your brain is not occurring properly, right? So there's that aspect. If you have a level of pain or discomfort, it oftentimes is a function that your muscular system isn't supporting your structure properly, right? So let's look at the word stress. Now, if we mean physical stress, if let's say you weigh 100 pounds, and we're going to give you a scenario here. So let's say you're a marionette, that dancing doll with strings that we, you know, if you're a kid, you always played with, right? So let's say you're a marionette and you have a mass of 100 pounds and you have one string controlling that doll. And that string is going to represent your muscle. Well, that string has to handle 100 pounds. Well, you're probably not going to be able to do much with that one, like from a movement perspective either, because you only have one muscle working. You have one point of attachment, and you can sort of shake it around and do whatever, and it's kind of floppy and gangly. There's really no control. So let's add two strings, right? So now you have two muscles. So in my little world, well, that's going to be if both muscles support the same weight, and they do in my scenario, right? So now all of a sudden, one string holds 50, the other string holds 50. So that tension on that one string has now been reduced by half. So the stress is now reduced by half, right? So if I jump forward to, say, four strings, now I've reduced the stress by basically 3/4, right? Because the other strings are now handling the other 75 pounds. So it's now 25 pounds per string. But in my perfect world, I have 10 strings, and this is amazing. So now each muscle is now responsible for holding 10 pounds. And this is awesome. I can do all kinds of really cool things because I now have 10 muscles moving my limbs of this doll. But let's say I get carried away and I go for a run and I hurt myself, and I go to the gym and I hurt myself, and I do these wonderful things because I'm doing things to be healthy. Let's cut three strings. Well, my mass didn't change. I'm still 100 pounds, and now I have seven strings supporting the mass of 100 pounds. Well, that's now 14.28 pounds per string. So I went from 10 pounds to 14.28. So there's over a 40% workload increase on those working muscles. Well, all of a sudden, so, you know, you asked about stress. So I increased the stress of those muscles by over 40%. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not going to be good if I'm doing a job. Like, let's say you go to your work, you know, and your boss comes over and says, here's 40% more workload for the same pay. Well, that's not good. Well, let's say we add 40% more traffic to your local highway. That's probably not good either. Mm-hmm. Adding 40% might not be the best thing unless we're talking to your bank account. That's a good thing, right? You know, that's usually a good thing. But in the scenario of how do we reduce stress? Well, normally if my right side is 40% tighter than my left side, I would look at that as a problem. And I'm going to go and I'm going to attack that tension, because tension, we've been told, is bad, right? But we just sort of said, well, the working muscles are now doing 40% more. So we're going to attack the guys who are doing stuff. So this is like your boss coming over and saying, hey, well, let's just, you know, let's cut another muscle, right? Let's cut another string because that tension's bad. Well, that was actually 16.67 pounds per muscle, right? So now they're almost at a 70% workload increase. So we cut one more string, but we got 30% more stress, right? That's brutal, right? If I'm looking at, like, how do I make my physicality better? Right, so that's different methodologies of stretching, foam rolling, Theragunning, like where I'm getting rid of this tension. Yeah. You know, so I'm destabilizing stuff. Right, so how do we fix it? Right, which is the question that everyone at this point's got. That's where isometrics comes in, because we're able to activate those tissues we may not know the names of. Right, and there's over 650 muscles in your body. There's over 4,000 tendons transmitting force in your body. So it's complicated, but we can strategically or accidentally target these tissues through isometrics. By doing long hold isometrics, these tissues are going to get stronger. So what it is basically reestablishing communication to muscles we may not have access to or were just cut. So we all of a sudden go from six back to seven, back to 10. But because we're training muscles we might not know the names of, let's say we find 10 more. So now all of a sudden, now 5 pounds per muscle, right? So we, in effect, reduce the total stress on each given tissue by offloading it to other areas of our body. And what do muscles do? Well, they absorb and transmit force throughout our structure to create or prevent movement. That is their primary goal, is to create or prevent movement. So what we did is we made your body structure relative to a per muscle basis lighter, right? So oftentimes when people do ISOFIT, they have the sensation of going, wow, I feel lighter. It's like, yes, because you're no longer using the same amount of muscles. We made your muscular system more efficient at handling the stress and the mass of your body, doing the activities that you love to do, whether it is running, whether it's picking up your grandchild, whether it's horseback riding, or going to play golf. We made all of those different scenarios easier for your body to tolerate. And this will take about 3 to 5 workouts.
Wow, that's incredible. So, you know, if I'm hearing you correctly, what you're saying is that if we go back to that picture of the marionette that has 10 strings, what isometrics does for the body is it just keeps adding more strings, so like to that marionette, to make you even better and stronger and taking less stress off of the muscles and your muscular system as you're building up that, as you're exercising on your ISOFIT and building up your muscles through those workouts. Yep. So in effect, you're just reducing all the stress in your body, and you can do it in 30 minutes a day.
And reducing it. And reducing the inflammation within the structure that's normally caused by exercise.
Yeah, that makes sense too.
So it helps with cardiovascular efficiency, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to help with circulation. It's going to help build your bone. It's going to strengthen your tendon, It's going to enhance your nerve conduction to muscles you might not know the names of. It's going to expedite fat loss. It's going to make you stronger. It literally is the holy grail of what everyone's been looking for. It's just, I put it together and said, hey, here's the best way to exercise. Now, if you have a goal of, like, I want to run, do isometrics, practice running. If you want to be good at basketball, do isometrics, practice basketball. Right. Same for volleyball, triathlons, all of these other things. Doing general gym exercise might be a really kind of a waste of your time if you want to be good at a specific thing other than general gym exercise.
Right. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because when I was on your website, you have whole teams that use your ISOFIT and do isometric training. Do you want to talk about how they use it?
Well, the athletes, so down in the U.S., so I'll talk about Alyssa Sesney. So she's a two-time U.S. national figure skating champion, right? So Alyssa's great client. So she had to retire at a relatively young age due to having 3 hip surgeries. So she was the darling of, like, it was 2009, 2011, she won the U.S. national title. And then she had basically a torn labrum of her left hip, went to surgery, came back, retore it a third time, and sort of said, you know what, I'm going to retire. And one of the things, so she is in the Detroit area, so working for the Detroit Skate Club. She's at this point dating one of my clients, a guy named Kurt Browning, who happens to be the 4-time world figure skating champion, also a client, also a success story about restoring his career, and I'll tell his story after this one. But with Alyssa, basically we just gave her the principles of do isometric exercise. She was living in Detroit, not Toronto, so she had worked sort of remotely. When she come to town, we'd sort of work with her. But what we were able to do in a period of 4 months was basically restore the communication to the muscles that would stabilize her hip structure. So she felt confident on the ice. So that way she could then start skating at a higher level again. After about 6 months, she felt confident enough to sign up for the U.S. National Seniors. She won the National Seniors. We had COVID. Then she won the season after that. So basically replicating 2019, 2021. So a decade after she won her first initial sort of overall national title, right? And figure skating is not easy. I mean, you're on blades, skating on ice, doing it to music, while spinning and turning and all this sort of stuff. So it's like, okay. And you look at that and you go, well, where would isometrics help with figure skating? Well, she's stronger and more stable, so she can do the moves that she needed to, right? Because the body doesn't care that you're moving. You're isometrically contracting in that movement to maintain joint position. Right. And a wicked conversation, which we won't bring up today. But when, you know, your tire is rolling on a car, like when your tire is rolling, the contact point on the ground actually doesn't move, which is very, very weird. Doesn't matter how fast you're going, doesn't actually move, which is kind of an isometric, to be honest. So there's all these things that we have to look at from a movement perspective. So Alyssa, we helped her basically restore her career. She was able to go from not doing jumps really to being able to do triples, qualified, and did 2 years of Stars on Ice. So she traveled career. So we have that level.
I was gonna say, what's one thing that you thought would be hard about your ISOFIT, inventing it, or the growth of your company that really wasn't? And what's the one thing that you thought would be easy but turned out to be really hard?
Oh, well, let's start with the hard, what I thought would be easy. I thought people would actually care to make a difference in their own life and adopt this quickly. You know, so I've the amount of resistance I get from people about, oh, well, you need to move to exercise. It's like, well, then why are you injured? You've been exercising for 30 years and you're a bloody mess. You know, and what people fail to recognize is that historical, like, I have to exercise, I have to move, I have to move, I have to move, I have to put a brace on my knee now because I'm moving.
Yeah. Big myth. There's a lot of misconception myths out there, isn't it? It's very frustrating.
Yeah, you need to contract muscle. You don't need to move. There's a massive difference to that statement, right? So if I get efficient at contracting muscle, well, if I need to prevent injury, I need to learn to contract my muscle faster so it doesn't move in many cases. And then what happens is you blow your knee apart because oh, you're worried about movement? Well, guess what? Movement injured you. That was the root cause of the injury, right? And movement is unstable. You cannot move and not be stable, right? So that's one misconception. So what we need to do in order to enhance stability within the structure is we have to learn how not to move. We have to learn how to generate force not moving. Learning how to contract muscle will hold you better together. It'll hold you better together as you age. And without it, you know, hip fractures are very high amongst women. You know, the leading cause of hospitalization for active seniors is walking.
Their hip broke.
Yep. They fell. They broke.
Yeah, they fell. Yeah, you hear that all the time. You know, grandma fell. Well, yep. No, grandma's hip broke and then it caused her to fall.
And then she fell. You know, and so and that's just a function of her bone couldn't handle her mass. And that, as I said, that's relatively easy to address.
What did you think that was going to be hard that wound up being easy?
Getting our patents. That was just that literally we were so early and it's interesting. So I was introduced to my patent lawyer and, you know, the whole process was relatively easy, expensive and scary, but easy. We went through it in 2009. So at this point, nobody in the world was talking about isometrics really. So he did a patent search in the U.S. patent office. And what he came back with me and said, oh my God, I've never seen this before. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, so within the U.S. patent office, there's in the world of exercise, there's a subclassification for isometrics. And he's like, well, there's virtually nothing in here for isometrics. So you basically have carte blanche to do whatever you want to do. So my initial patent's 108 pages. So we basically patented geometric shapes above the platform for the purpose of restraining movement. So that's why there's not a lot of other companies out there currently doing it, because they would be infringing on our intellectual property rights. So a couple more years when they sort of become, you know, expire, you'll see every company out on the planet doing isometric exercise. So you're about 8 years away from being like, oh, isometrics is the coolest thing. And well, you know, at that point, I'll probably actually appreciate the competition because I won't have to explain to you because they'll do my marketing for me, you know, which is absolutely fantastic. But, you know, so the adoption from the person who's looking for help, that's been the hardest.
Well, that's going to be my next question too. What small steps can people take? Somebody's listening to this and going, okay, Brad, I'm sold. What's the next thing to do? And where would you point them?
Just try to start adding about 5 minutes of isometrics into your life, you know, because that's the equivalent to 30 minutes. So if you're really pressed for time, and it'll help a ton of people, right? Where I told you earlier that, you know, isometrics was better than cardio training. That was 8 minutes a day that they were looking at versus 30 minutes of running, you know, and that they were looking at 5 days a week or 90 minutes a week of running versus 24 minutes of isometrics. So, yeah. So, I mean, the effectiveness of this is will save you time as a consumer or as an individual looking to better their health. You don't have to carve out an hour anymore. I mean, that's just, you know, or that where they say, hey, do 100, like what is the World Health Organization say you need to do 150 minutes. Okay, well, I just showed you how to do 150 minutes in half an hour, you know, so carve it out.
That's incredible. Yeah, you know, that's incredible.
And that's just the literature. That's not me just trying to market or make stuff up. It's like, here's this study, this study, this study. But you look at that and you go, if you can find 5 minutes a day just to sort of create the belief, because until you believe that this is going to help you, you're going to say, oh, he's just trying to sell his product. And I hope I come across as I'm not trying to sell a product, I'm trying to sell a method of making your life better and easier. So you don't have to deal with the crap diseases that I see people with that I help. You know, it would be better just not to get the disease instead of trying to get ketchup. Yeah. Interesting subject. So I started working with a guy with kidney failure the other day. So he's looking at potentially having kidney transplant, and he's now looking at, his goal is not to go on dialysis. So he does. So day two into his workout, he's like, I feel stronger already. I feel more confident already. And this is a gentleman who's lost over 50 pounds. He used to be in the health sector. He's lived a healthy life, right? He just got crap genetics. And was basically, this is a genetic disease that he has. And unfortunately for him, he's probably going to have a tough rest of life. However, if we can improve the quality of his life by maintaining his strength and stability and muscular system, he's going to feel better about himself, right? He's going to have a little bit more confidence. So start with 5 minutes. go to 6 minutes, work your way up to half an hour. If you ever want my product, I'm here, you know, buy it. If you don't want to use a wall, use a towel, use, you know, a door frame. There's many different things that obstruct movement. We just made it super easy and convenient.
Yeah. And I heard you mention about mindset and people believing that this is going to happen. What are your thoughts? How do you feel about mindset and belief, you personally?
Oh, wow. I live my life on a work back schedule. What do I want to achieve? Work back from that point. You know, I've achieved stuff that, oh my God, I cannot believe that I'm even here. Like it's crazy. Both from, you know, I have 20% of the NBA using my product. The U.S. Army called me. You know, I don't have a workforce. I don't have salespeople calling. Like all of these clients have basically called me. They found me through social media, whether it's a podcast or just the ungodly amount of stuff I post on, whether it's LinkedIn or Instagram on the daily. But all of our growth has been word of mouth. It is other people telling their peers, oh my God, you have you used ISOFIT? You have to. Like that's how we ended up Hollywood's newest celebrity workout, right? Because the strength coach for the Cleveland Cavaliers told his friend, a guy named Jason Walsh in Hollywood, and Jason trains the who's who of Hollywood celebrities, right? Everyone from like, you know, and I'm not saying these people use my product. I'm saying Jason has worked with these people. Mm-hmm. Bradley Cooper, Scarlett Johansson, Matt Damon, Jake Gyllenhaal, you know, Zoe Saldana, who does use ISOFIT because she was in a magazine sort of thing. This is my Hollywood workout, which, you know, thank you to all the gods, everybody's God above us, you know, looking down on this because we're helping so many people. I think, you know, everyone out there is, you know, trying to help, trying to push this forward. But from a mindset perspective, man, I just have a belief and a mission to help people. And, you know, what governs my day in every decision that I make is create health, change lives, and give back. So if I'm able to do one of those three or all three at the same time, I win. You know, that's my goal in life. Like I have a legacy product. I created something that's going to exist far beyond my passing. I'm going to help thousands, if not millions of people improve the quality of their life through what I do. We see it daily with the people that participate in isometric exercise, whether it is through isometrics with ISOFIT or not. It's just one of those things. And my access to the individuals that I get to experience and talk to is tremendous.
Wow. Brad, you truly are a visionary. So you just touched on, you know, your vision for the future of isometric training and what you want to see happen in the upcoming years. Was there anything else that you wanted to touch on?
We're going to be in every gym. We're going to be in every health club. We're going to be in every golf club. We're going to be everywhere. Because at the end of the day, if you want to perform the activity that you love to do, you need to do isometrics, right? It's just a function of that. My long-term goal is basically to realistically sort of check out, hang out with my daughter. Hopefully she has some kids at one point in her life, you know, hang with my wife and my grandkids. And, you know, one of the things that I've been blessed with over the years is because I am that visionary. And this is a story and a moment that I'm so proud of. For all my work that I have done, I managed to purchase an 11-acre oceanfront property with basically 1,500 feet of shoreline on a 140-foot cliff overlooking the Bay of Fundy, right, which is just north of Maine. And it is the most magical property on the planet. And now, before you think that I'm bawling and I'm like rolling in cash, I found it on a website, the equivalent of Craigslist, for $90,000 Canadian, which would be the equivalent of $52,000. I got on a plane, I flew to an area, and I said, oh my God, this is my dream property. I took a chance. Want to know the irony? It's called Chance Harbor.
Oh, wow.
Right. And it's like, literally, it's like the script is written, because I've always wanted to own an oceanfront property.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Here's one that I could afford. Here's an area I've never been to in my life. And I found it on a discount web, like literally Craigslist, when I just Googled oceanfront properties, East Coast Canada. And this thing popped up and it was like on page 32. And it was just that persistence of look and look and look. And there's a knockdown home on the property and it looks like it basically has got mold on it. It turns out it's sea rot. But I've never been really, I don't know what sea rot looks like. But it was abandoned and it was on the market for 12 years.
Wow.
Right?
And wow, that's amazing. It was saved just for you.
It
the universe, God, whatever you believe in, it was just, that was just waiting for you to come along. That's an awesome story, especially one about like just vision and our mindset, how we put those things out there and, you know, what we speak into the air, you know, into the universe, we need to be very careful with, because you never know how that's going to manifest itself or what that looks like. Yeah. So Brad, oh, go ahead.
Oh, and then you have to be actionable. Right. You actually have to get on the plane. You have to phone the person. You have to follow.
Take action.
Right. And that's the key. It's great that you have a mindset, but if your mindset says don't, like I just have an ungodly belief that I will achieve what I'm going to do. People look at me and they go, you're crazy. I'm like, yes. And you know, I have an attitude.
Thank
that,
you.
Yeah. It's like, if you hit turbulence, speed up. Right.
You don't
slow down in turbulence. So like all of these different things, but
yeah, that's exciting. Yeah. Just go out there and do that. And mindset is everything. I feel like I need to bring you back on another time just to unpack mindset, but I have thoroughly enjoyed talking about exercise, fitness, ISOFIT. Like I said, I can't wait to get mine now. I'm actually going to challenge myself and do the 30-day challenge and put down running and see what happens. Brad, how can people reach out to you?
My email is Brad, B-R-A-D, at isofit.com. So ISOPHIT.com. And, you know, so fire me off an email if you have a question. You can also basically find me on Instagram. So ISOFIT or at ISOFIT _inventor is my personal one, or LinkedIn, you know, and sign up for our newsletter. We put out a newsletter every day that deals with isometrics and how it helps with a specific ailments. You know, we always cite the science and we usually put a link directly to the science if you want to explore it further, just because there's so much stuff on it. And basically we've been doing that since May 14th. We've been putting out a letter every day. You know, so that's basically, we have over 100 basically emails on the subject area, or blog posts, I guess it would be a better statement, on the subject. So a little bit of stuff.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. This has been an amazing conversation. I appreciate it so much.
Myself as well. Thanks, Sue.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Small Steps, Big Wins podcast. I value your time with me and I seek to make every moment count. In order to make lasting change in your life, listening is usually not enough. So I want to ask you, what practical steps are you going to put into action today as a result of listening to this podcast? Remember, any step, any action, no matter how small, starts your journey to a big win. And if you're not sure where to get started, reach out to me and let's have a conversation. Until next time, love yourself, then love others. Peace.